So I want to welcome everybody to this evening's Maori Report. I'm so excited to see everybody, but before we begin, I got to remind everybody the views and opinions of the show are those of the host and guests and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or anybody else. Boy, I'm excited tonight. My guest tonight is Bianca Kamola. Did I get that right? I feel like I did.
Absolutely, Jim.
Absolutely, Jim. That's good.
I've
been practicing, and then we had a session about it just like 45 seconds before we hit air. And, you know, normally that psychs me up and gets me so inside my own head that I call you Bill Murray. And, Bianca.
I'm glad you didn't.
Your bio is astronomical. That's a bad pun for those listeners who don't know who you are yet. But go ahead and give us, I read your Twitter bio. I don't want to say it that way, but I know you're involved with a lot of things. So go ahead and lay out for the listeners who don't know who you are.
Hello, everyone. My name is Priyanka Kumala, and thank you so much, Jim, for bringing me onto the show. I'm super excited. Okay, how do I introduce myself? I wear multiple hats. My recent hat is being a podcaster. I love spotlighting Asian entrepreneurs and leaders and bringing their stories to limelight. So that's been my recent hustle. But by day, I'm a technologist. I work for the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, focused on digital transformation projects. I'm also a new mom, so I have a one-year-old, so he keeps me busy. And on top of that, I love to make memories, and I love to write thank you cards. I hope that's a good summation of who I am as a person.
Well, we're going to get deeper into all, I don't want to necessarily get all of that, but when do you sleep? Because I heard you have a day job, a podcast, and a one-year-old. I don't see much time for sleep in that picture.
Hey, Jim, you know how the life of a podcaster is, right? So, you know, you gotta hustle.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't see much time for sleep in there. That's what I'm saying.
You know what? I've realized, Jim, of late, that emotional well-being and self-care needs to come first. So I get a good solid, at least 6 to 7 hours of sleep. I try to eat well 3 times a day and, you know, try to keep myself fit. So I think I'm heading there.
Well, it sounds, you're doing good, because I've been, well, December, I got a CPAP machine, right, that tattles on me how much I sleep every night. So I've been way more mindful of how much I've been sleeping, because I wake up every
day. That's a good thing.
I've been waking up and checking that app, because, you know, they have this CPAP machine has a score on it, and I want 100%, you know, I want to be perfect at everything, right? So I have to sleep like 6.5-7 hours, and there's some other things, but the sleep milestone part of it, too, is the key most of the time.
Hey, you're doing a great job, Jim. What about the paranormal activity? You still have time for that?
Yeah, every once in a while. I haven't been out as much, but, of course, COVID threw, you know, everything into a blender. But, you know, that's given me time to, and this is where things get dangerous, when you start thinking about things outside the box and about how you would do things if you had a chance to do things. So, I'm looking forward to the next opportunity I have to talk to people about their paranormal experiences and then go investigate them, because I think how I look at things differently now than I would have 5 years ago or even a year ago is going to be fun. But, you know, it's kind of...
I agree.
It's funny, because the first thing I want to talk to you about is the STEM stuff, because it's... Well, that all kind of plays into this, right? Even though it's paranormal stuff and makes, you know, some people scared... But the science and the technology and the E just kind of slipped my mind. I know maths and... What's the E?
Can you repeat that? What's the?
What's the E in STEM? Because it just totally slipped my mind, because I have science, technology, and I know math.
It's science, technology, engineering, and math.
Engineering. That's probably why it slipped my mind, because I'm not strong at that one. But I think...
Hey, you know what? I'm an engineer turned technologist turned management executor. So you're asking the right questions to me.
So I think the you know, as I develop more into that thing of trying to understand the ununderstandable. Because, I mean, you could be the spiritualist, right, and just believe 95 to 100% of everything, but at the end of the day, if I'm going to convert you into a firm believer and convert your people into being believers in something that isn't necessarily in a book today, it's going to take a different course of action than me just going and sitting in the dark for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and engineering needs a strong foundation of science and math, because basically you're trying to solve problems, and you look around yourself and, you know, everything has engineering built into it. It's just your perspective.
So how do we, I mean, I think the big motive is to encourage students to get more into these fields, because I didn't look up the numbers, but I know I recall seeing that we're not turning out enough degree college level people to fill the positions we already have, let alone grow. So how do we go about encouraging young people to take an interest in STEM?
You know, that's very true, Jim, because if you look at the percentage of women with STEM degrees, it's right now 24%, and there's a huge gap in terms of bringing in more people into STEM careers. And something that I strongly believe in is having role models and mentors, because that's benefited me greatly. Because when I was growing up, you know, I had people around me who would be, you know, engineers and technologists, and I always aspired to be somebody like them. And then I would say, okay, what did they do to be who they are today? And that's how I realized, okay, it's the STEM career that they chose that has made them successful. So, you know, something by default is, as an Asian, your choices are limited. You have to pick a STEM degree. So I think that was really helpful to me personally in terms of choosing my career path. But now when I look at a lot of, you know, young students, high school, middle school students, they're super smart. But it's most important part for them is to make sure they're part of the STEM talent pipeline. You know, they don't fall off, you know, the path once they go to college, you know, because they're not quite sure about what they need to major in. You know, that's the place where we'll have to have strong role models and mentors who could guide them to choose the right career path that would help fill the talent pipeline for the U.S. especially.
Yeah, mentoring in anything, we can get to it in business and podcasting and leadership and anything else that we want to talk about tonight, but having somebody that you connect with who has been there, maybe not necessarily exactly where you are, but in the proverbial there of being there and doing what you're looking to do is outstanding. I'm sure you've... You mentioned that... When did you... I don't want to say knowingly went out and sought one, because I'm sure by the time you went out and sought one, you've already had an experience with somebody before that. So when was the first time you made a connection with somebody that you really looked up to and started you down the right path?
You know, my own family, my parents are not technologists or engineers. My dad is a lawyer. My mom is my mom is a science graduate. So it started from my own family. And, you know, my mom was someone who was hands-on. You know, she used to sit with us, me and my sister, after school and tutor us on, you know, the various things around us, like, you know, small things that we would play around with, like electronic devices. And that got me curious, like, how did this work? You know, can I do something that's automated, like switching on a fan? You know, back in those days, in the 90s when we were growing up, automation wasn't a part of thing. Like, you had to literally go and switch on the TV. You didn't have a remote in those early days. So I used to get all these fascinating ideas about, you know, how do I really switch on the TV without actually walking, you know, some distance to get things done. And my mom was such a role model for me, who inspired me to be in STEM. And, you know, that's how it started. And then my sister followed my path. You know, she ended up being a STEM graduate herself. And then today I'm happy that I can give back to the community and inspire my set of cousins or my extended family to actually take up a career in STEM.
Yeah, I think you mentioned remote controls for TVs, and I often think, always joke with my kids, they're a little bit older than yours, about, you know, hitting the antenna for the TV because it wasn't coming in right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, my goodness. I remember those days, Jim. You know, we used to run upstairs in our house, and, you know, as kids, we would keep playing around with the antenna. Like, my dad used to say, okay, the signal isn't coming properly, and all our cousins would run upstairs and keep moving the antenna, and we would keep shouting downstairs saying, okay, is it right? Are you getting the signal? So, you know, fun days back then.
And the other thing, like, you know, they're mad because their YouTube video is lagging, right? And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. You're watching what you want to watch, not what was on one of those four channels that you could get, right?
Oh, like, man. I still remember those days. I mean, at least growing up in India, we had standard channels from the government, which would, you know, which would be broadcasted between certain times of the day and certain days as well. So we used to keep waiting for our weekend shows because that's when you would have these fun, interactive shows. The rest of the time, it would be about farming or, you know, like a soap opera that I was never interested in. So, yeah, but things have changed now, right? You have on-demand TV and, you know, live channels. So it's a different world altogether.
So, oh boy, you just left me at an interesting paradox, and I'm going to go down this road. When did your family come to America?
So it's actually me. My parents still stay home back in India.
Okay.
So my sister and I, and it's been more than a decade since we've been here, and now this feels like home because I came here in my early 20s to pursue my master's and my further education since then, and it's been a wonderful place, and the community is so welcoming. The people over here are so warm and hospitable, so I've been enjoying my stay over here.
So technology has to help you with that, bridging that gap, because I can't imagine otherwise being that far away from your parents.
That's very true. You know what? Like, 10 years ago, it was so hard to stay connected with my parents. Now we have all these Googles and Alexas that would live stream what's happening in my parents' house or vice versa. But back then, you know what, Jim? I used to remember, we used to get these calling cards, and then those were expensive. And I could only speak like 5 to 10 minutes a day to my parents, and I had to speak so fast because I'll keep counting the minutes that are left on my calling card. But looking back, I feel those were like wonderful days where we adapted to the limited technology that we had. But I'm great that technology has evolved in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 10 years ago, which is basically when my show started. So we're not talking 150 years ago or, you know, that long ago. You're sitting here telling me this, and I'm going, yeah, that was not that, you know, like, man, that just made me feel, I don't want to say old, but it just really took some wind out of my sails, I guess, for the lack of it. But that was one of the things that I wanted to bring up to you about how technology, well, I mean, we've had computers now for 15, 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're changing in shapes and sizes and stuff, and obviously getting faster. But it's still just a computer. I mean, obviously, smartphones have entered the picture and kind of, have they derailed what we're doing with computers or taken over?
You know what? It's, you know, technology is always a double-edged sword, right? You use it for the right thing. It's beneficial to you and the society. And you know the downside of it as well. It depends on, you know, how you are cautious about it. But let me tell you that something interesting about me. Like, during my childhood, my parents invested all these savings in buying a computer. This was in the late 90s, early, close to the 2000, 2001 years. And it was so fun. Like, everybody would come home because there was this huge computer, like a desktop sitting there, and we would play around with Microsoft Word and print all these different animal pictures, go to yahoo.com. You know, that was the time where we were introduced towards technology and computer science. Sort of fascinating because it showed us there was a world outside my four walls. Because until then, you had to get knowledge from books or from your parents or your extended family or your friends. But it opened up the world for us with the concept of internet, and the world was so interconnected, I should say. And fast forward to today, like, I have a one-year-old who, you know, literally plays around with all these smart devices, you know, activated remote controls where you just speak and things show up on your on your TV. So definitely, I think technology has been a stepping stone in terms of improving the quality of life that we have. But on the downside, again, as I mentioned, you know, it's a powerful tool. So you get to choose which side of the coin you want to play around with.
Now, he's a little young yet, but do you have concerns about too much screen time?
Oh, yes, I do. I still worry a lot about, you know, the biggest challenge that we have, Jim, is, you know, as parents, you got to use smartphones. You use all these different kinds of devices because you need to be connected with work, your podcast, and other things that you do. But at the same time, children are kind of, they see you as role models, so they're kind of going to model what you're doing, and they think playing around with smartphones is like the standard thing. But then as a parent, you worry that, okay, a one-year-old shouldn't be looking at my smartphone. But then it's just so hard to, you know, delineate that difference? I mean, how do you really separate your personal life and stay disconnected from these devices? It's just so hard in practical terms.
Yeah, I know. I've been trying to, again, be more mindful of these things. Just trying to put it down, you know, disconnect.
Right.
It's bad.
It's so hard.
It's bad.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes I've become more intentional. Like, I try to do my work or stay connected with my devices when I'm away from the kids for a little bit of time. And then when you're around with your kid, I just try to focus on him. And actually, it helps you stay in the moment, because you're going to end up endlessly scrolling your Twitter feed or, you know, whatever you're looking at, or your Instagram, when you're multitasking, like being with your family at the same time, playing around with your smartphone. So I'm trying to be intentional, like what you are.
So you mentioned this earlier, and this kind of parallel intersects with this conversation. One thing I have tried to do to break that gap, but while I'm still trying to ease myself out of it, is take more pictures, which sounds counterintuitive. But uh-huh. because now I have the task, right? You take the picture, and then you can put, you know what I'm saying, you put it down. Like, it is definitely locked in, and there's a task, and it's done. And mm-hmm. and it, as you were saying, one of your taglines there was creating memories. So there's that end of it, right? And then there's the mm-hmm. I have something possibly that I can edit, which is something that kind of in this weird messed up mind of mine, I can do a little stress relief by just changing the picture, just getting the colors and all that other stuff to go woo out mm-hmm. of this world. Of course, it never ends up that way when I post it. It just always ends up dark and gloomy. I'm not sure what's going on there, but nevertheless, it's fun to see it all bright and happy. I just like it a little bit dark.
Right.
Maybe it's because my screen's so bright, but I don't know. But there's that, you know, you can play with it, and then there's that content that comes out of that. But it's that knowing, like I said, that it, do that task and then put it away. I've been mm-hmm. like I said, it's tough. But you want to create memories. Now, I'm talking about taking pictures. We take more pictures today. We take more videos. But are we? I mean, is that good though? I mean, I know it sounds good on the surface, right? But I'm thinking, because we're so wrapped up in taking the pictures, because I know there have been times where I've been too busy taking pictures to enjoy the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make...
You know, Jim, the world runs on Instagram, right? For most, for some of us.
Yeah.
Which means, like, taking better quality pictures and getting those likes and comments from a lot of people. You know what? You bring up a very good point, Jim, because screen time is not just for toddlers. It's even for us as adults. You got to be more present in the moment. And I remember, a famous photographer talking about, you know, a scenario where I think it was something around a wildlife, where there was this picture perfect moment that he wanted to capture, but he actually didn't. And somebody asked him, like, you're a world-famous photographer, and why didn't you capture that moment? He said, I captured it with my eyes because I wanted to be there and see for myself rather than put a lens on it. That's it. But you need a lot of self-discipline to do it. And you know what? I love taking a lot of pictures. Like, my phone is full of pictures. And but sometimes you have to step back, as you mentioned, and, you know, just enjoy the moment. It's still a work in progress, I should say.
Yeah, I think the first step is just realizing that you have to take it and realize there's something, and try to figure out how to navigate doing it. Because obviously, like, we've both probably been here doing it too much, put it away, and then the next, whenever that time limit's up, you're on it like it, you know, you missed something, like a world changing event, and you didn't, but it feels like you did because you've been gone for 4 or 6 a day, whatever. It just, yeah, doesn't work so well. But, okay, so now the transition that I have in my mind is we're talking about being more in the moment, and you're a live event speaker, which always blows my mind because, I mean, I do this show, and I sit here, and I talk to people. There's nobody here. There's a bunch of stuffed animals across the way, a bunch of books in the other corner, right? But there's still nerves that go mm-hmm. into this. But what's it like getting up and speaking in front of 100 couple people? Like, how do you deal with that? Right off the shoot.
You know what? I love it. Let me tell you something interesting. So I stepped on stage when I was 5 years old. and I gave a speech about an airplane. And since then, the bug to speak on stage hasn't stopped. And I've continued it even after moving to the U.S. I was part of Toastmasters. I got my Distinguished Toastmasters. And then there's no stopping me. So the mic and microphone and, you know, and myself, they're inseparable. That's how I see myself after all these years. And, you know, it's just because I love people. I think that's the crux of it. I love people. I love sharing thoughts and having interactive, stimulating conversations. I think that keeps me going. And, you know, speaking to our audience, be it in person or now more of the virtual events, it keeps me going. There's some spark in me that just lights up, and even if it's the middle of the night, I'll go and give a talk. You know, that's how much I love just being out there.
As I say, it has to be different now, though, right? Speaking like we're speaking tonight, you're going to still reach the same number of people you did in that setting, but it's totally different now. You're home. It's not necessarily as intense to a degree. Obviously, there's some. But when you're doing it, because I signed up for a conference tomorrow to watch virtually, right?
Mm-hmm.
I never would have been able to attend that conference if it was in person, because I have other things to do that morning, so I can hop on the computer when I get home and watch, which is great. I think going forward, if we get to a hybrid point where you can still watch but still have people in person, I think it's going to be phenomenal for these events. But that's a whole another point. But when you're speaking now at these conferences that are just projecting, I want to say Zoom, I guess. I just want to say the four-letter mm-hmm. word, because it is what it is at this point. Do you still get that energy feedback from, like, the crowd, or how does that change for you?
Yeah, the medium is different, right? Because starting from your posture, like, you're not standing and talking in front of people on a stage with a microphone. Now you're here broadcasting via your laptop or just a smartphone. That's actually got me thinking, like, how do I feel about it? You know, definitely that energy in the crowd is something that you can get only when it's in person. You know, that's where you get that feel that I want to do this. For an online event, it's just a different, different way of presentation. But you know what? Your executive presence is something that that still stays the same. You know, the way you present yourself, the way you still feel passionate about your talk, I think that still stays the same to me. And I think you just have to adapt to changing scenarios, because a lot of, small businesses, like, you know, people who speakers and, you know, authors and coaches, where their mainstream form of business is going in person and giving talks, has changed, right? Now everybody has to adapt to these online platforms. And hey, if that's the norm, you just have to adapt and get going, go with the flow.
Yeah, but you had a little experience with these online platforms before all this started, see? So you were you were slightly ahead of the curve.
I know. And you know, the best part, Jim, is like being a podcaster, right? Because I've done in-person events, and then as a podcaster, you do these live stream events, right? So I think, it's just a different way of looking at things, and change really helps you to adapt.
So since we're right here, let's do this right now before I forget, because I look at the clock and we're already 24 minutes in, and time's flying on me. Promote the podcast. Tell me where people can listen, what the name of it is, the question that everybody hates. Everybody asks me this question. I go, I don't know what the podcast is about. Give me that fun work over right here.
Hey, thanks for that beautiful plug in the show. And you've been doing great so far, so I never felt it's been 25 minutes, so you're doing a good job, Jim. So the podcast is called Curry Up, Start Up. It's focused on spotlighting world-class Asian entrepreneurs, C-suite leaders, CEOs, CIOs, the executives, and leaders who are doing inspiring things. And the target audience for this podcast is global leaders who can feel inspired and ignite conversations around how do you create best versions of yourself. And the reason why I chose Asian entrepreneurs especially is because I feel there's a lot of underrepresentation in terms of bringing Asians into the limelight, giving them the recognition that they deserve. especially budding entrepreneurs and leaders. So I felt I would take it on myself to create a platform to suit the haunts, the personal successes, the journey, the trials and tribulations that Asian leaders undergo to be where they are today. And you can find them on YouTube. We do live streams on YouTube and Twitter, Curry Up Startup Podcast. And it's available on all podcast streaming platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, your Googles and Alexas, you name it, you got it. And you can check us out. You can follow me on Twitter or LinkedIn, Priyanka Kumala. And then check out PriyankaKumala.com, where you can find more information on the podcast as well.
Great website, by the way. Well, obviously, I've been there today intensely.
Thank you.
Doing you know, my homework on you. I've been there before. That's, you know, because of the sharing the stuff and kind of connecting before this, so I was aware. And obviously, that played a factor in you being here tonight. So, good job on that.
Thank you.
So, take me back, though. What made you want to do a podcast to start with?
You know, two things, Jim. First, as a new mom, I had this desire in me. I was on maternity leave, and I was like, I need to do something more with my life. And, you know, usually I'm someone who just can't stay still. Like, I just can't sit at home and say, like, oh, I'm a new mom, and, you know, I just got to chill. That was just not me. So I decided, you know, I was thinking of this idea of a podcast because I personally felt there was this vacuum in terms of representing Asian stories. You know, me personally, I had this challenge, and I was like, I'm quite sure everybody else must be facing the same challenge. And I was like, okay, let me get started on this. But the background is that, as I mentioned, I love people. You know, I'm always curious about how people's, you know, life journey shapes up. And, you know, anytime I even get on an Uber or something, you know, I start talking with my, viewer guy, saying like, okay, what got you here? You know, what do you do? And, you know, things like these, that's just my usual style of interaction. So I felt my love for people always stays in there. And two, spotlighting Asian was a nice combination. So two of them. And then I felt I could use my sleepless nights as a new mom to really channelize my energy into doing something that would make me feel happy. So that's how it got started. And now we are close to 35 episodes in a year. And, you know, I'm looking forward to keep that inner drive in me going.
I was going to say, you might be the only person I've ever talked to on my show or on their show who answered that question was, I had a baby and I needed to do more. Just for the
you
record.
You know what, Jim? Thank you. I take it as a compliment. And
it is. It is because, I mean, like I said, I have two older ones, right? And those first few months of anything creative or wanting to mm-hmm. do something more just wasn't there. So I there's a special something in you that I am honoring. I'm not slacking that. I'm just saying that there is something.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Thank you. And you know what? I think motherhood really pushes you into doing something more, because I had the same feeling that, you know, once you enter a different stage of life, your priorities change, and, you know, how do you manage time? But when you love something so dearly, you actually find time. Somehow magically it just happens. And, you know, it's very inspiring for me personally, Jim, especially during COVID when I'm doing this episode. It's like you're speaking with a couple of people for a couple of hours every week. And I feel very grateful to get that human connection and, you know, getting to get a lot of wisdom from these people, you know, because, you know, their life journey, everybody's life journey is so different. And it's just so hard to meet so many people, right, from across the globe who are willing to give you the time to share their stories. So I feel immensely grateful to my guests and people like you who support what I'm doing. So thank you so much again.
Oh, you're welcome. And I appreciate those moments too, right? Just because we cross paths mm-hmm. right here, right now, and in 6 months or a year from now, I'm going to see your name again, and I'm guaranteed to go hit you on Twitter and see what you've been doing. Like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, thank you.
Like, you know, like, you're always going to be a former guest of the show, so there's always going to be a piece of me that's vested in you and seeing what you're doing. So, unless you block me.
I appreciate that, Jim.
Which has happened before. But anyways, that's a... Why am I ruining...
That makes me...
Why am I ruining this nice moment?
Hey, you're not actually. You know what? I'm going to remember this. moment, and then see, I'm a memory taker, right? So I'm going to remember this moment, and you know, you got to check on me 6 months down the lane and see what I'm doing with my life, and hopefully I live up to what you believe in me.
I believe that with your podcast and your drive that somebody somewhere someday is going to be like, where was she before this? And, you know, there's going to, I mean, you've done some things, but I hope that this moment and all the podcast and all the listeners I have can help you not only share your show, but help share STEM. Yeah. And all, I mean, like, this should help people understand how important some of these other things are out in the world. With all the negativity going on in the world, people are always telling me they're looking for positive things, and here I'm bringing them one. So now let's take the positive seed, and I'm planting it. Let's make sure the flower grows and gets seen by everybody. Good analogy there.
I know. Hey, you're getting into the STEM field. Hey, you seem to have another career, Jim, that you should seriously consider.
So the other thing, well, one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about was leadership, and you mentioned talking to these business owners and how COVID kind of has impacted everything. So I'm kind of feeling that vibe because a lot of businesses have been horribly hit by this, and then several others that I can think of off the top of my head have taken off because of their ability to ship and all these other things. So as you're out there talking to your different entrepreneurs, how's the actual vibe down on the street level of the people you're talking to, because I just watch it from a distance?
You know, you got it right, Jim, because these entrepreneurs have been very hard hit, and I have some of my dear friends who are women entrepreneurs as well. And as you know, at least the stats say that, you know, 38% to 40% of our business owners are women in this country, and they've been super hardly hit, because they've lost their clients. They're not a lot of engagements that are happening in terms of organizations bringing them in for talks on leadership or any of the portfolio of work that they provide. So it's definitely challenging, I should say. But I love the fact that these entrepreneurs are quickly pivoting themselves, and as we talked earlier, moving to more virtual events. You know, they provide, say, for example, you know, shorter coaching sessions through virtual events. They're offering free sessions. You know, some of my friends are even writing books. So I think they're channelizing this energy to really amplify what they're doing, but in a slightly different format to still stay relevant. You know, that's one aspect of it. The second aspect I would say is, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurs are actually asking for help. You know, the government is providing a lot of grants and resources to help these business owners. But seeking help through the community, through the network that they've built over the years, I think that's definitely being very helpful. You know, in terms of if organizations are talking a lot about, say, for example, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, if those topics resonate with these entrepreneurs, you know, what are some ways to bring them as speakers, as guests to these organizations where they can talk about relevant, topics as well. So definitely a lot of, they're hard hit. You know, the revenue models are hit terribly by this, and I feel for my entrepreneur friends. But you know what? They had that drive and that courage to choose that path, and I'm quite sure they'll come through this successfully and thrive going forward. It's just that they have to adapt their business models and seek more help and, you know, stay strong and bold to overcome these tough times.
Yeah, it has to be difficult because it wasn't like anybody had an opportunity to prepare for this in real, you know, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, winter's coming, right? You're from D.C., so you know what I'm thinking. Snow's coming, right? We all have our chance to get our coats and our boots and everything ready and understand what's going to happen. Well, this kind of just jumped up on us and, in some cases, just closed everything down for months in places. There's no way anybody was ready for that. But I think we're all going to be ready potentially to do it going forward, or at least have a thought in our mind of how things are going to look if this ever were to happen again. I'm still unsettling to sit here thinking, you know, how do I protect my business if I have to just close up for 3 months again? Just sitting here thinking about it, like, I can't imagine trying to build a business that is sustainable to that point. It scares me.
Yeah, Jim. Right. And there's a lot of uncertainty, right? Like, even if it's back to normal, our organization's going to have the budget, because everybody's hard hit in terms of their bottom line. So if the organizations are going to have budgets to actually support these entrepreneurs, you know, give them the kind of work that they're used to doing. And it's a, you know, it's just like a cycle, right? Because one person gets hit and, you know, it's just a ripple effect in the entire ecosystem, which is hard. And, you know, I hope things change and, you know, everybody has good and happy times back again.
I agree. I couldn't agree more with that. But I want to rewind a minute because I did have another thought, but I couldn't. It didn't matter which way I went with that. You mentioned trying to get in the places and trying to open doors, and it's tough for everybody, right? But especially being a woman in business, there are certain barriers that men don't have, and I'm not trying to get to that controversial point, but it's just a natural fact. But my bigger point is, I think now that we can put you and have people consume you in a way that they could feel more comfortable with you, is this making any sense? Instead of just cold calling, like, because everybody Googles everybody anymore, right? So they can sample and see that you're not out in left field. You have a smart business acumen. You speak well. You know what I'm saying? Like, the package is there. Am I making sense to you? Because I feel like I don't know where my question is in all of this, but I just feel like I need to say that.
Oh, thank you for that. Hey, look at the global scale, Jim. There are close to like 250 million women entrepreneurs around the world. And these are women, you know, in different stages of entrepreneurship. Like, say, for example, I was speaking to someone back in India who's one of my podcast guests where he's focused on women entrepreneurs who are disadvantaged, like widows and, you know, young women who are interested in doing something to lead independent financial, you know, to gain independence through financial stability. And they make candles. You know, that's just one way of entrepreneurship. I mean, what I'm doing today through my, you know, my education and my experience is very different from, you know, an entrepreneur who makes candles for a living. And everybody's hard hit in the same way. I mean, the scale is slightly different. But, you know, the spirit of entrepreneurship is something that keeps us going, because you always feel there's light at the end of the tunnel. Tomorrow you're going to have a new client or, you know, somebody who believes in your business and gives you an opportunity to collaborate. You know, so it's just the way the world seems to work now. And it seems to be like the survival of the fittest. You got to keep going and, you know, wait for things to come back to normalcy or continue adapting your business model if this is how the world is going to work going forward.
Yeah, I think you have to just continue to adapt, no matter if it's your business model, your podcast, your Instagram. I had to say it.
Hey, by the way, I'm not an active Instagrammer, so putting the record straight.
Oh, that's just I am, but I fail at it. I do it more for ad laughs. I don't want to say, because I don't post jokes, but it's just kind of one of these things that I want to say I enjoy. I just more enjoy posting and then seeing what other people are up to. But I feel
it feels weird
just looking. So you have, you know, maybe that's just me. I don't like being that guy. So I just kind of post and then, you know, share in the moment with things, because maybe somebody's looking for a podcast to listen to. Maybe they'll find me that way. So, you know.
Hey, our listeners need to go and check out Jim's Instagram. I'm going to do that tonight.
Let's see. I posted a picture of the studio this morning. Was that this morning I posted that? So you'll get to see the awesomeness that is.
Oh, that should be interesting.
So.
Okay.
Be looking for that, everybody. Leadership is a fascinating thing to me, in business or in the classroom or in the boardroom. Is leadership something that is developed, or is it something, I don't know how to phrase this, is it something that people are just born with and you just know, like, naturally they have it, or can it be taught?
It goes both ways, Jim. You know, that's why we have business schools, right, who teach you leadership. So, and there are some people who are born leaders who are natural. They know how to handle things and successfully run organizations, big or small. So I think it's more the personality. Like, for me, I always enjoy leading people. Like, even from my childhood, I would be the one who would put my cousins together and, you know, make them stand in a line and make them do things the way they should be done. So that was much more natural to me. But after a point in time, I felt, you know, a professional education would help me elevate my business acumen. You know, that's how I got my MBA from the University of Michigan. So everybody's path is different. My mom, say, for example, she's a born leader because the way she communicates, the way she builds relationships, the way she has integrity and ethical values. I mean, these are core skills for any leader. Those were just naturally in her. I think that was just part of her upbringing. And, you know, that kind of stuck to me as well as values that I cherish. But then I felt, you know, with these training times, I need to get a professional education that will train me in several aspects of leadership, several aspects of management, and different fields associated with leading a successful organization. So I would say it's more a personality trait in terms of being a born leader versus, you know, still going and getting an education that will elevate you to the next level.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find it, it's a struggle for me to, because I believe that you can be taught it, but I've seen people that were taught it and there's still something missing. And I don't know how to, right? It's weird to say that out loud. I don't know if it's just the natural navigation or the understanding or the real-time pulsating of it. But,
and you know what, Jim? There is a difference between a leader and a manager. And, you know, that's a struggle that a lot of us go through. But, you know, over my own experiences, I feel like to be seen as a leader, you need to have a lot of thoughtfulness, a lot of patience, a lot of understanding of dynamics around how do you navigate around teams and people. So people management skills is very crucial. So I agree. It depends on, you know, the kind of personality that you bring to the table to be seen as a leader.
So you'll appreciate this. Germantown Runner has a question for you who makes my job easier because he has great questions. This question is better than what I was thinking, so we're going to go with it. What changes in the culture or marketplace need to still occur to make it easier for women-owned small businesses to launch?
That's a great question.
I told you he had good questions. That's
I know, right? He's like a loyal listener for the show. So good to have such loyal subscribers at this time of the night. You know, for women business owners, especially Jim, you need a lot of support from the community. I think it starts from there. And then you need role models as well. You know, as somebody, you know, as a person of color, as a you know, somebody comes from a different country and wants to set up business here in the U.S., you know, a lot of support from your community is very crucial. And on top of it, you know, when you go through challenging times, it's having the right kind of mentors and role models who are willing to spend their time and energy to invest in your success. Like, I see you as that, Jim, you know, by helping a new podcaster to really get to the next level. So that's one crucial aspect of it as well. And, you know, support from you know, the government or your local chambers of commerce by giving grants and giving more opportunities for these women entrepreneurs to succeed, I think that's crucial as well.
Yeah, I think obviously having mentors and having people on the bottom end, that sounds bad, but the support system, not only at home, but for the business, like, it's just, I mean, it's not the entrepreneur themselves turning it. Mm-hmm. It's this whole network around them that if they've tapped into and developed those relationships that will make it successful or make it not successful. As
right.
Rough
as that may sound. You know, the other thing, right. And you know, the other thing, Jim, is asking for help. You know, that's one of the underrated qualities, and especially for women business owners. You know, we multitask. We do a lot of things with grace and expertise. But there are certain things where you will have to bring in the right kind of experts, where you'll have to ask for help. And I try to say this to me personally as well. Like, always seek help, seek mentorship, and let people know that there are certain skill sets where, you know, you still got to learn, and you got to be gracious about it and just keep going by asking people for help.
we had a little conversation before we went on air about simple advice that wouldn't sound so simple. And asking mm-hmm. for help is in that same vein, right? Like, it sounds so simple, right? It's easy to say. But I think we all say that, right? You should just ask for help with that. But...
Right, it sounds simple, but, you know, that's something that we don't tend to do. But I'm glad you're focusing more on, you know, emphasizing that aspect.
Yeah, it's... And sometimes you just, you know, if you see some... I guess, play this completely forward. If you see somebody struggling, offer to help them. I mean, asking somebody for help is probably the hardest thing we could come across, besides saying apologizing for something you messed up on. I think that's a coin flip right now in my book.
Right.
So offering that hand even if you weren't asked.
Right. And you know what? The other thing that I want to mention is, you know, there's a recent, a report that says that 48% of female founders report that they don't have access to advisors or mentors to help their business grow. So that's a huge challenge. And there are a lot of successful entrepreneurs who are men, and we need to make them as allies so they can help us succeed as well. So, you know, gender agnostic advice and creating that support system of successful people who've done it pretty well and learning from them, be it men or women, I think it's good as well for women to really introspect and see, okay, where are things where we are falling off the curve and how do we really elevate ourselves?
Yeah, there needs to be a more equitable network of people that are willing to share their... Because, obviously, you're not... No matter how good your whatever becomes, your business becomes, if I do my business good, we're both going to exist. Unless you become... Amazon, good, which I don't know if that'll happen again for a while. Even Walmart still exists with Amazon. But anyways, that's way off topic of where we're headed. We're talking about small businesses and on the small scale,
mm-hmm.
just people trying to survive and, you know, have a good life, I think. But there's so much room for that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and creating a strong ecosystem, because it's not a... I mean, I know it's a competitive world, but it's not that if I have to win, you have to lose. You and I can win at the same time and maybe create more collaborative initiatives that will help us get to the next level as well.
So next question from Jimmertown Runner, because he is just on fire.
Hey, absolutely. Bring it on.
He always is. India has become a big player in the space industry, which I know he loves. So has India's STEM push been responsible for India's space success?
That's a brilliant question. I'm glad India is now in the spotlight, because you look at the mission to space, and India has played a commendable role in terms of putting itself onto the radar of other superpowers in the world, be it US or Russia. You know, it's great leaders out there in these Indian space missions who believe in, you know, bringing the best talent in the country. And when you send a mission to the moon or to the Mars, the world is looking, you know, and everybody feels inspired. Like, as a young kid, you'd be inspired about, okay, how does this rocket or spaceship launch? And look at the kind of recognition that India is getting in the global map. And that really inspires you to, you know, take a peek at, okay, choosing a STEM career would lead you to become a scientist, and you could launch a mission to space. You know, as simple as that. And, you know, kids get inspired. And now with technology, you have access to all, you know, to what's happening with these live countdowns in terms of, you know, getting to know how these missions are being launched and the kind of technical challenges that they go through. That keeps people very curious, young kids especially, and they feel, hey, choosing a STEM career would put me on the world map, and that's something that they would love to do for themselves. So I think definitely pushed kids to choose more of the STEM careers. And I think it's the liberal attitudes of parents as well. So there's a huge generational shift in terms of choosing careers, and you don't have to be necessarily an engineer. And back in India, you have this concept of stability, as you need to select a government job so that gives you enough financial resources for the rest of your life. People are willing to compete in different aspects and, you know, choose a STEM career that benefits them. So definitely, I think space missions held.
Now, you can get mad at me for saying this, but I don't think this way anymore. So let me preference it by saying this. This was a fleeting, probably couple year period in my life where I thought space travel as a whole to the moon, to Mars, anywhere was a big waste of mostly money, time, resources, when there are so many things here on Earth that we need to take care of. But then, through the process of becoming a little bit more wise to the way of the world and things that we're discovering coming back from and pushing out towards going to Mars and coming, you know, all this stuff, kind of retrained my mind into thinking that maybe that isn't a horrible idea. So go ahead, you help me for having that thought for even a second.
Hey, you get to choose your opinion, right? And everybody has a different perspective, Jim, which we respect. You know, everybody's priorities are different. Somebody who's so fascinated by space, and there are organizations, say, for example, like NASA or the Indian Space Institute, that are focused on, you know, what's happening in the universe, right? So, you know, it's just nice to figure out what's happening outside of this world. Sometimes you just have to have a different focus on life.
Well, but like I said, but I guess the good news is that I got out of that thought and was able to see that the growth and the understanding and the value of things. If you get too tight into things, and that's the great value of doing this show, where I can reach out to somebody and say, tell me why I'm wrong about this. And more often than not, they'll come with a smart opinion. I'll go, oh yeah, I'm horribly wrong about that. So let's.
Hey, and you're being humble, Jim. Like, we can be opinionated, but respect each other's opinions, and, you know, still staying sane. I think, you know, that's the best part about being Jim.
Is that the best part about being Jim? Okay, I'll take that.
Now, hey, that's one of the best parts, I should say.
You know, you said that, and then I said, I there was that split second, like, well, it's great, right? Like, there's that whole moment of, what am I going to, you know, like, which, if you had to pick that one thing that's the best thing, you know, that there's open-ended, you know, what's your favorite color kind of question. What's your greatest asset? You know, I'm sure you've been to a job interview or somewhere, or and they ask you that question, you go, here's one for you. Now that you've been, you know, you've done, what, 35 shows now?
Yeah.
Here's this one's going to come, and I'm not really going to ask you this, but just be prepared when you're on other shows, because this question comes up every interview I do. Who's your favorite guest?
Okay, go for it.
Who's your favorite guest?
Who's my favorite guest? Oh my goodness, it's like, who's your favorite kid?
Yeah, I know, that's right. That's exactly it. So just be prepared for that, because it never gets easier to answer. And, you know, I'll give you the little out that I kind of use. My next one, of course, I don't normally have my next guest lined up yet, so it's kind of a trip and fall out of the question.
Hey, right, but Jim, I actually have an answer for you. You know, I have had wonderful guests on my show, but I have somebody in my mind that I hope she comes to my show sometime, maybe my 50th or my 100th episode. That's Indra Nooyi, the former CEO of Pepsi. She is my role model. And I've always, when we were growing up, I still remember my dad used to say, you know, when I wouldn't eat or, you know, throw a tantrum, he would say, you got to be like Indra Nooyi. You know, why are you behaving in such a way? And, you know, that's how it got ingrained in me. So I would love to have her on my show, and she would be one of my favorite guests is what I'm thinking.
Well, I think she's one of your favorite people. And so to have her on your show would automatically make her one of your favorite guests, which is fair.
I know, right?
Who else would you? I mean, besides her, who would be the dream yet?
The dream? Hey, come on, Oprah Winfrey. She's taken on the world with her media acumen, and I would love to sit face to face with her and actually get a chance to be a host.
I think you're onto something there. That'd be pretty cool. I'm gonna ask. I normally don't. I used to ask these questions all the time. They're towards the end of my show, and then I got away from it. But I want to ask you this one because I think there's something here that I'm ready to ask. What's your favorite book?
favorite book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. That's my all-time favorite. It talks about the life in Nazi camps and, you know, really understanding the purpose of life, Jim, because sometimes you got to take a step back and look at life holistically, and that book has really been a game changer.
See, I knew I was onto something there. I just didn't know what it was, and I'm glad I asked it. Go ahead, give me the website for the podcast again before we, because I look at the clock and I know I need to do this because I want to make sure people are listening to you because what you're doing is solid work.
Thank you so much, Jim. Really appreciate that. So, Career Up Startup Podcast, and my website, the website for the podcast is PriyankaKumala.com, and you can find Career Up Startup Podcast on YouTube and Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, we're there.
And I know there's one person out there like me, because I admitted this at the beginning of the show. All of that information will be in the podcast notes and wherever you're listening to the show versus when it's not live. It'll be all there for you. Because...
Thank you.
I know that's intimidating to somebody out there trying to spell that, because it would be for me. So I'll get that taken care of and make sure that's all promoted in there as well.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Hey, that's Priyanka Chopra, so your listeners are not going to forget my name.
Well, they're not going to forget it. And the fun thing I'm thinking right now is, as we've been through the STEM stuff and the business stuff and the podcast stuff and the women in business stuff and the leadership stuff, and it's amazing how all these roads intersect with you. And the mother wanting to do a podcast thing, like that still sits in my head, and I'm probably not done thinking about that for tonight. But I mentioned earlier looking forward to seeing you in 6 months and a year as my show continues and your life continues to evolve. Where do you want to be in 6 months or a year?
You know, I'm still open-minded in terms of, you know, the role or the title that I would have or the medium that I would work with. But one thing that I really love doing is amplifying the voices of people and creating impact through that. So be it a podcast or be it through being as a technologist or as a woman in business. That's where I would end up seeing myself, working with people and amplifying their stories.
So... couple things as we run out of time, so if it seems like I'm rushing...
Hey, that's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. We're still talking over and on.
So as I look at this, be sure to mention me when your new podcasts come out, because I'll continue to retweet those for you going forward, without a question. If you have anything science-related, STEM-related, anything that is important that you need to get back on here to talk about, obviously you know where to find me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So take
a... Oh, absolutely, and thank you.
As some people will tell you, the hard part is bugging me enough to get you back on, but that's the way it has to go, and so do it. Don't feel guilty about it, because when you do 50 of these, and then I do a bunch of live call-in shows, so it's actually like doing 40 of these, you know, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the... I shouldn't be saying this to you on the air. That's not a good secret to be giving out right now. Good thing it's towards the end of the show.
Hey, it's... You know, that's the best part about your show, Jim. You are who you are. And, you know, Jim is such a responsive guy. I mean, he says this thing, but, you know, anytime I tweet or I send him a note, he answers right back. And I would love to be back on your show talking about a different topic and maybe just reminiscing our lives from 6 months ago and seeing, you know, how things have changed.
Well, I'm sure at some point we'll cross paths again. I say that to people and then it'll be 2 or 3 years. But like I said, just keep after me and we'll get it done.
Hey, absolutely. I know where to find you, and so do you.
Yeah. I don't know where to find me. Somebody has to find me. That's why I'm asking people to keep tracking me.
You got it. I'm going to make a note of it and set a reminder for 6 months.
All right. Well, I appreciate you, and have a good evening, and go enjoy that young baby.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. Such a pleasure being on your show. Thank you for the opportunity, and to the listeners out there, Jim is such a wonderful host and, you know, an amazing guy to get to know, so... stay tuned for all his upcoming episodes as well.
Thank you. Have a good night. And to my listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. It was kind of a different little beat, but that's kind of what we do around here. Bring a little different beat to people. I really enjoyed it. So I know most of you did. I've seen a lot of positive feedback as the show was going on live. So good night.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.